You might have heard the fable of the boiling frog. Here's Ted Ed giving one variation on it.
Two frogs are minding their own business in the swamp when, wham, they're kidnapped. They come to in a kitchen, captives of a menacing chef. He boils up a pot of water and lobs one of the frogs in, but it's having none of this. The second its toes hit the scalding water, it jumps right out the window. The chef refills the pot, but this time he doesn't turn on the heat. He plops the second frog in, and this frog's okay with that. The chef turns the heat on very low, and the temperature of the water slowly rises. So slowly that the frog doesn't notice. In fact, it basks in the balmy water. Only when the surface begins to bubble does the frog realize it's toast. What's funny about this parable is that it's not scientifically true.
As noted, the fable of the boiling frog is false. A frog in water that's gradually being heated will jump out before being boiled, while a frog thrown into boiling water will be burned immediately and stand no chance at survival. In the end, the fable of the boiling frog seems harmless unless someone tries to test it out on a real-life frog. And it can even be helpful as a reminder to people not to remain complacent when there's a slow brewing crisis. On the other hand, there's a much more pervasive and pernicious myth surrounding death in water, which is this, that a person taller than the water they're in won't drown. After all, they could just stand up. This was one of the central arguments made by the state at the Amanda Lewis trial, along with the claim that her daughter, Adriana, was afraid of the water to the extent that she would have avoided it like the plague. And so, the argument became that like the frog in the fable, Adriana must have been thrown in the family's pool.
Hi and welcome to Undisclosed, Toward Justice, The State versus Amanda Lewis. My name is Rabia Chaudhry. I'm an attorney and author, and I'm here with my colleague, Colin Miller.
Hi, this is Colin Miller. I'm a professor at the University of South Carolina School of Law, and I blog at Evidence Prof Blog. This is the third episode of our deep dive investigation into the drowning death of Adriana Hutto, which led to her mother, Amanda Lewis, being behind bars for the last 18 years.
Let's start by reminding you of the details of the pool in which Adriana drowned. It was a sand and sun, easy set, 18-foot by 4-foot pool, meaning the above-ground pool had an 18-foot diameter and was 4 feet deep, or, put another way, was 4 feet high. The pool was blue, round, inflated, and soft-sided. So you might wonder, what safety precautions did Amanda and her boyfriend Alan take to make sure that 7-year-old Adriana and 6-year-old AJ wouldn't fall and drown in the pool? According to Amanda, the first thing was rule number one, keeping the ladder locked up in the shed.
You normally keep the ladder locked up?
Mm-hmm.
And the ladder's locked up now?
Yes. That was the first rule when we got the pool, that the ladder would stay locked up. And it stays right there in the shed.
And as Alan testified at trial, this was an idea they both agreed on.
His idea was the ladder locked up in the shed.
We both agreed on that.
As noted, the top of the pool was 48 inches above the ground, with Adriana being 47 inches tall and AJ a bit shorter at 45 inches tall. Therefore, without a ladder, there was no clear way for them to get in the water. In addition to the lack of a ladder when it was locked up, Amanda and Alan typically kept a cover on the pool that only they could take off. Most days, then, there wasn't any way AJ or Adriana could have fallen in the pool. So why was the cover off on the day in question? Here's what Alan said in his police statement.
Did you have a cover to the pool?
I did.
But where did you take the cover off? How come the cover wasn't on that day, sir?
Well, I was putting the chemical in it. It was just a regular old rubber cover. I put the chemical in it one time before, and it started eating the oil off of the cover, and it was getting in the water. You could tell the oil residue was coming off the cover. So a few days before the incident, when I put the chlorine and the tablets in, I left the cover off.
Breaking this down, Alan testified that they purchased the pool about 6 weeks before Adriana drowned on August 8th. According to Alan, during the six-week stretch, there were only two time periods where the cover was off the pool, other than when the family was using it together. First, the three-day period between treating the pool with chemicals on August 5th and August 8th, when Adriana drowned, and second, some period of time after the prior chemical treatment when he noticed the oil coming off the cover and temporarily took it off. Other than that, the ladder was locked up and the cover was always on. Beyond that, for when the kids were using the pool with parental authority, there were water wings that they could use to keep themselves afloat. Here's Amanda telling this to the police as well as getting into why they purchased the pool.
Did you ever get in the pool with the children and play with them?
Mm-hmm. Me and Alan both would get in there and play with them. And we'd swim and, you know, play. And I mean, they liked to play turtle, and that was just where they got on my back, and I'd swim around the pool. But as far as Adriana, she, unless she had the floaties on or we were with her, she didn't like to get away from the edge of the pool so that she could hold on. Or either she'd stay at the ladder. Before we bought our pool, we would go to Alan's sister's. And she would do that. She'd stay right there at the ladder. Of course, that one they couldn't reach.
As you heard, Amanda's explanation also relates to the origin story for the family pool, which is that she, Alan, and the kids have been using Alan's sister's pool. Here's Alan relaying this information to the police.
When did I get in your sister's pool, or when did she get in your sister's pool?
It's nothing more than questions I'm about to tell you. It's been a week or so. It's been a while. That's why I went and bought my own, so we wouldn't have to be going to my sister. So it's been probably over a month or so, however long I've had mine.
Yeah.
But we were both in there, and they both had floaties on, her and AJ both. And Amanda was in there with both of them.
Was there anybody playing with them?
We both were.
Flinging them? I mean, nothing violent, but...
Nothing violent, just playing with them in the water.
Playing.
So, what were the competing narratives presented at trial? According to the defense, Amanda was trying to teach Adriana to swim, with the hoping that the pool purchase would allow Adriana to become a stronger swimmer. And while Adriana was afraid of going underwater, she enjoyed spending time in pools and would wade into the water at Waterworld and when they went to the creek. The prosecution countered that Adriana was deathly afraid of the water and never would have willingly walked over to the pool by herself. Here's Prosecutor Larry Basford laying out some of this argument in closing.
Now, they didn't get that pool for Adriana. If you'll recall, Adriana was afraid of the water by everybody's account. By her teacher, by her grandparents, by her great-great-aunt, by the defendant, by Miss Summers, Gidget Summers. Well, everybody said she was afraid of the water except Al. So that pool wasn't bought for Adriana.
So let's go through what each of these witnesses said in the stand. First, we'll start with Gidget Sanders, who testified about a recent occasion on which she saw Adriana in Alan's sister's pool. For reference, Gidget's husband is Amanda's cousin. At trial, here's what Gidget said about seeing Adriana in Alan's sister's pool.
Well, she swam the whole time we were there. I say swam. She was in the water the whole time we were there. She never moved away from the side of the pool. She always either held on to the side of the pool or held on to the ladder. She would play with her brother some and my son some, but still she would have one hand holding on to the side of the pool. There was one time that my son and her brother AJ kept going underwater and swimming, and you could tell that she wanted to try to do what they were doing, but at the same time, she was scared to let go, and so she got my attention and her mother's attention and was going to go underwater as the two boys were doing, and when she did, she was holding on to the ladder, and she said, "Mom and Aunt Gidget, look," and so... We were talking, you know, and we looked over there at her, and she went underwater, but she never put her head completely underwater. She would only go about halfway, and her mouth would stay wide open, and when she'd go under, she'd come back up like she almost couldn't breathe, and she wasn't even underwater half a second. I mean, it was just under and up, and she was hassling and just kind of, you know, like she was gasping for air, and you could tell she wasn't underwater long enough to, you know,
Did she just try that one time, or did she repeat the effort over and over again?
She did do that a couple of times.
And every time she put her head under the water, would her mouth be open?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so she never got comfortable putting her head in the water?
No, sir.
Now, as you might recall, Larry Basford lumped Gidget Sanders in with the other witnesses, saying Adriana was deathly afraid of the water. But when he asked her about this at trial, she was quite clear that this was not the case.
Now, you will agree with me that from the way that she behaved around the water on that day when you were there, she being Adriana, she was afraid of the water, wasn't she?
Can you rephrase that? Afraid to go underwater or afraid to be in the water?
Well, I wasn't there, ma'am. Was she afraid of the water or was she afraid to go under the water? You tell us.
She was not afraid of the water, no.
Okay. But she was afraid to go under the water?
Yes.
All right.
This testimony is entirely consistent with Amanda's own accounting. Specifically, she testified that she was teaching Adriana to swim, with the primary issue being that Adriana didn't like her head going underwater.
And were you trying to teach her to swim?
We were trying to teach her to swim, yes, sir.
How far or how advanced along was she in terms of trying to learn how to swim?
She really wasn't that advanced. She had learned how to paddle.
But how about holding her head underwater?
She did not like her head underwater.
Okay. And during cross-examination, she gave Larry Basford much the same response as Gidget Sanders.
Adriana was afraid of the water, right?
She was afraid of going under the water.
Adriana didn't know how to swim, did she?
Not very well, no, sir.
So that's two witnesses who said Adriana was afraid of going underwater, but wasn't afraid of water in general. And as Basford himself acknowledged, Amanda's boyfriend Alan specifically said that Adriana was not afraid of the water. Now, let's look next at the other witnesses cited by Basford. We can start with two witnesses who testified in the sole subject of Adriana not liking baths. First, we have Glinda Sue Grantham, Adriana's great aunt. At trial, she testified as follows.
Adriana, how was she around water?
She was terrified of water.
Why do you say that, Miss Grantham?
You couldn't put her in a bathtub with water in it. She'd get hysterical. You could give her a shower, but you didn't. To stop her in the tub and try to give her a tub bath. I mean, the child would be hysterical.
Second, we have Chuck Burns, the husband of Adriana's grandmother.
Was Adriana afraid of water?
Absolutely.
You knew that?
Yes.
Okay. Have you seen her around water before, sir?
Yes. When she'd go take a bath, Brenda would give her a bath when she was at our house. I never know her been in a pool.
So her grandmother knew that she was afraid of water.
Right.
Now, understandably, on cross-examination, defense counsel Walter Smith followed up on this thread by confirming with Chuck that his opinion was solely based upon Adriana not liking baths.
Ms. Burns, did you see Adriana outside of a bathtub? And did you see her at the beach? Did you see her at a lake? Or did you see her in a swimming pool?
Never.
Never. So, from what you saw, she didn't like to take a bath.
Well, I mean, I periodically would run her water, you know, for Brenda, and if she would, I'd give AJ a bath, and she'd go in there to give Adriana a bath.
Right.
I never was in there when she gave her a bath.
Okay, well, I'm just trying to pin down that your observations of Adriana really are strictly tied to taking baths, right? And apparently she didn't like to take a bath. Is that accurate?
Yeah, she just said there's too much water in her usually.
Okay.
She wouldn't get in.
So Glinda Sue Grantham and Chuck Burns both testified that Adriana didn't like baths and was terrified of taking them. Beyond that, your mileage may vary in terms of how she felt about other types of water. Next, we have Adriana's teacher, Robin Mercer, who had taught her in the most recent school year. She had no firsthand information from Adriana herself, but had heard something from other students about her fear of swimming.
Did you know that Adriana was afraid of water, like going swimming?
She never told me that, but she did tell some other students that.
Okay. That she was afraid of the water?
Yes.
It's tough to say much from what Mercer overheard. Did Adriana say she was scared of swimming, afraid of the water, or both? But sure, this certainly seems to show some generalized fear of water. That then leaves us with Brenda Burns, Adriana's grandmother. Like her husband Chuck, she testified that Adriana did not like baths.
How did Adriana like the water?
She didn't like the water.
Did she have a fear of water?
Yes.
Can you explain what you mean when you say she had a fear of water?
Just when you would give her a bath, she didn't want much water in the tub, and she didn't want you washing her hair. She didn't want her head under the water. I mean, you know, just to wash her hair. She just cried.
But Brenda was able to go beyond baths and testify about how Adriana behaved at the beach.
Did you ever have an opportunity to see her around water other than just bath water? And I'm talking about either around a swimming pool or a lake or the beach or something like that, ma'am.
Yes, sir. We would take them to the beach. And she would get right at the edge, but she wouldn't get in the water. She would run back.
She didn't like getting in the water even on those occasions?
No, sir.
So that takes us through the witnesses whom Prosecutor Larry Bassford cited in closing. But there was another witness that Bassford didn't reference, Alan Jr. As you'll recall from last episode, he was Alan Carnley's 14-year-old son who split time between Alan's trailer and his mother's home. And according to Alan Jr., Adriana liked playing in her aunt's pool and also in the creek, as well as when they went to Waterworld.
Now, you said that Adriana liked playing in the water.
Yes, sir.
How do you know that?
Because she would play in the creek, and then we went to Waterworld, and she was playing in the water, and then at Aunt Penny's pool, she'd play in the water.
Okay. So she liked to get up to the water and splash in it and play in it.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Now, in case you're wondering what Waterworld is, we're not talking about the Kevin Costner film from the 90s, but instead a theme park in nearby Dothan. Here's part of a promo for it.
Enjoy Waterworld Water Park, Dothan's most exciting beach. Get more splash at Waterworld Water Park. Built in 1980 by the city of Dothan, Waterworld is situated on 12 beautiful acres and located in one of the premier athletic and recreational parks in the state. Waterworld, it's really, really fun. A tipping, diving, raging, zooming, splashing, and swimming world of fun.
So yeah, it certainly seems like Adriana couldn't have been that scared of water if she had so much fun at Waterworld. But what about the pool of the trailer? How did Adriana feel about it? This ended up being a critical point of contention at trial.
What did Adriana think about the pool, do you know?
I don't know.
All right. Do you know what she thought about water?
She liked playing in the water.
Okay, but did you ever see her in the pool?
No, sir.
All right. Mr. Carnley, you and I spoke briefly before we got in court this morning. A few days after this incident, I think on August the 10th of 07, you remember talking to Sheriff Lee and some other people from the sheriff's office about this incident?
Yes, sir.
Do you remember them asking you about if Adriana liked the pool or not?
No, sir.
Okay. You don't remember that? Do you remember telling them that she couldn't stand it? You recall giving that answer to Sheriff Lee?
Yes, sir.
You do remember saying that?
Yeah.
Okay.
This was a pretty big blow for the defense. If Adriana couldn't stand the pool, it's probably unlikely that she willingly went up to it herself and fell in. And so the jurors were likely left thinking that an accidental drowning wasn't what happened. But what did Alan Jr. actually say in the statement referenced by Assistant State's Attorney Brandon Young in this line of questioning? While this wasn't played at trial, let's take a listen.
How did she like the swimming pool?
She couldn't swim. She didn't like it.
She didn't? You ever seen her mess around in it when there weren't nobody around? Mess around with it, go up to it, or anything like that?
Well, Daddy told me that one time she had the wagon next to it and trying to fill up a bucket of water. And he told her to leave the pool on and put the wagon in the backyard in the fence.
Your daddy seen her trying to do that? When was that? Do you remember?
He didn't tell me what it was.
And bam, this recorded recollection is absolutely huge. It eliminates this entire line of argument by the state at trial. It's still unclear how afraid Adriana was of the water, but here's a clear story of exactly how Adriana could have ended up in the pool. getting in the wagon and trying to scoop out water. And recall that other than when the family was getting in together, the cover was only off the pool after the two most recent chemical cleanings. This means that the memory that Alan Jr. relayed likely happened the only other chance Adriana would have had to do something similar. This takes me back to my theory from last episode. In the incident that Alan Jr. mentioned, Adriana got the wagon from the wooded area by the fence, pulled it over to the pool, got in the wagon, and tried to scoop out water and presumably bugs. Then, on the day of the drowning, just after neighbor Earl Wells drove by, I think Adriana went back to the same wooded area by the fence and saw both the bike and the wagon. Thinking she might need some stability and support, she wheeled over both the bike and the wagon. This way, she could stand in the wagon and have one hand on the handlebar of the bike while she scooped out bugs and water with her other hand. But now, trying to lean over further to scoop water, and without Alan Sr. telling her to stop, she fell in. And recall, this is exactly what first responder Charles Corcoran thought had happened when he first arrived on the scene.
In the photos of the pool, you see a wagon and you see a bicycle. It was my assumption at that point that the child was up on either of those two toys. That type of a pool has no resistance when you put weight on it. It's water supported. My assumption was she went over the side of the pool, went down, hit her head, and came back up.
It also lines up with what first responder Gary Jacobs said about the wagon and the bike being side by side next to the pool when he arrived.
Can you tell me what that is?
That's the pool room.
Okay.
But yeah. I think the bicycle will stand up side of the pool. I'm not sure, but I think it's stand up side of the pool or this side of the wagon.
When you arrived there?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I recently relayed to Amanda what Alan Jr. told the police, and she was shocked. And I don't know whether you know this or if it's been brought to your attention over the years or not. I listened to Alan Michael, the son, his police interview. And in the police interview, he mentions some point before the day in question, he says his dad told him he saw Adriana pull the wagon up to the pool. And she got in it and was scooping out water and maybe bugs. And Alan had to tell her, don't do that. Move the wagon away from the pool. Were you ever aware that he had made this statement during his police statement? Or did Alan ever tell you about this happening?
No.
Yeah, it didn't
come to either one.
Yeah, it wasn't brought up at trial. But in his police statement, he very clearly says, my dad told me that Adriana a few weeks ago had pulled up this wagon and was scooping things out of the pool herself.
Wow. No, I didn't know about either situation.
Got it.
This was so shocking to Amanda because while Alan Sr. had never told her about Adriana and the wagon, Amanda's own theory has always been that Adriana fell into the pool from the wagon. Here's what she said in her very first police interview.
Do you know how she got in the water? I mean, do you know?
No, the only thing I can think of was she was standing on the wagon, reaching over.
Is that their wagon?
Yeah, that's their wagon.
Now, notably, this wasn't sheer speculation from nothing. As you might recall from last episode, Amanda and AJ both agreed that Amanda asked AJ where Adriana was when he was in the garbage pantry. And we noted at that time that we would get into the specifics of what Amanda says that AJ said at a later time. Well, that time is now.
Hey, Undisclosed listeners, we're going to take a quick ad break, and I just want to explain something to you about why it's so important for you guys to support our sponsors. You might not know this, but all these years, all the work we have done for all of the defendants whose cases we reinvestigate and cover has been pro bono. We don't charge them or their families or their lawyers a dime. And the only way we can afford to do this, which this is work that would ordinarily cost a defendant hundreds of thousands of dollars, the only way we can afford to do this is because of our sponsors. So we are so grateful to our sponsors, and we are grateful to all of you. If you want to know what you can do to help support our work, support our sponsors. Thank you so much.
Did you know that at any time, it is estimated that a staggering 5% of all prisoners are wrongfully incarcerated? I'm Michael Simanchik, Executive Director of the Innocence Center and host of the podcast For the Innocent. We tell the stories of those who have been unjustly imprisoned, and the tireless efforts required to bring them home. Check out Season 3 of For the Innocent to hear our latest episode with Amanda Knox and more exoneree stories. Follow For the Innocent on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever podcasts are found.
Hi, everybody. Rabia here. I am so excited to tell you, if you haven't heard yet, that Undisclosed finally has a Patreon. Our Patreon is where you will find all kinds of perks like ad-free episodes, a bonus episode every month where Colin and I answer all your questions. And also, you're going to find perks like early access to our limited merch drops, which are going to start happening twice a year, as well as the ability to get on a Zoom call with me once a month, face-to-face, to live discuss any true crime case that you guys are obsessed with and really want to go through. And I love having a place to talk about that stuff because I need people to talk about it with. But if you're not in it for the perks and you're in it for the justice and you just want to support our work, I would really ask you to please sign up for the dollar a month tier. And the perk there is just good karma and warm fuzzies and being in the fight for justice for these defendants, because if everybody chips in a dollar a month, our work can be funded for another decade to come. So check out the Undisclosed Patreon by going to patreon.com/undisclosedpod. Again, it's patreon.com/undisclosedpod. And I hope to see you all there. Thank you for supporting our work for a decade. And please stay with us so we can do this for years to come.
Here's specifically what Amanda said in her first police interview.
But then when I asked him what she was doing, he said she was cleaning the bugs out of the pool so we could go swimming. But Adriana, she had ADHD and she was on Focalin. And one minute she could want to go get her school stuff, and then next she would want to get in the pool. She would go back and forth in what she wanted to do.
So yeah. If Amanda was telling the truth, it seems highly likely that Adriana was in the wagon trying to scoop bugs out of the pool when she fell in. Because as Charles Corcoran said, these soft-sided pools provide no resistance, meaning that someone leaning against one of them at a certain height would fall in. Now understandably, Prosecutor Larry Basford tried to use what Amanda said against her at trial. Here's the pertinent portion of cross-examination.
And that is when AJ told you his sister was over there by the pool.
Yes, sir.
Getting bugs out of the pool.
Yes, sir.
According to your story, right?
Yes, sir.
So instead of immediately running out there to your daughter, you pick up the phone and call your boyfriend. Am I getting the story right now?
Yes, sir.
Even though you know your daughter can't swim and she's not supposed to be around the pool.
Yes, sir.
On the one hand, this raises some questions and some might say suspicions. On the other hand, keep in mind what we know now versus what Amanda knew at the time. The ladder to get into the pool was locked in the shed. Alan Sr. hadn't told Amanda about Adriana previously pulling the wagon to the pool, so Amanda had no reason to know Adriana was off the ground. If Amanda is forming a mental picture in her head, the side of the pool is slightly above Adriana's head, and she's on the ground, reaching her arm above her head, seeing what she could scoop out. And while the pool could buckle and Adriana would fall in if she were up in the wagon, this wouldn't happen if she were down on the ground. Plus, Amanda sent AJ to get Adriana rather than simply doing nothing and going back inside. All of which goes to say that you might find it normal, or strange, or somewhere in between, that Amanda responded the way she did to what she says AJ told her. But, whatever you think, let's contrast Amanda's claim with what the state said at trial. As we noted last episode, Prosecutor Larry Basford claimed in closing that Amanda threw Adriana in the pool, dunked her, went inside the trailer, created a cover story, and then went to the front door to ask AJ where Adriana was. So how does that square with the wagon and bike being right next to the pool when the first responders arrived? Again, recall that Scott Kirkland bush-hogged by the trailer at 1 p.m. and he saw the wagon and the bike in the wooded area over 100 feet from the pool. And also recall that Earl Wells drove by the trailer mere minutes before Adriana drowned, and he didn't see either the wagon or bike by the pool. If Adriana didn't wheel them over to the pool herself, how and why did they get there? Amanda is about 5'9", and wouldn't have needed to step onto the bike or wagon to throw Adriana in the pool and drown her. And in any event, why would Amanda drag both the bike and the wagon to the pool? Adriana using the bike for balance as she stands in the wagon makes some sense as a kind of kid logic. Amanda pulling both the bike and the wagon over does not. Additionally, AJ never said that he rolled the bike or the wagon to the pool. But AJ did say something about the wagon and Adriana getting bugs out of the pool. It's not a part of AJ's core story, and it would be dropped by the prosecution mid-trial. But it is something that he said in his police interrogation. To get there, let's again restate AJ's core story. In this story, Adriana wakes Amanda up 3 times when she's trying to sleep by doing things such as spraying and slamming cabinet doors, with these incidents being the trigger that leads to Amanda drowning Adriana.
I held the cabinet open and shut. She slammed the cabinet door.
Who did?
Adriana.
Where was your mama at?
In the bedroom. In holes. Not Adriana, it was mama's.
Then what?
When mama held the spray, she spilled something because she has a vent on the top of her door.
And what happened?
Mama started coming out.
Can I go back?
Step out? Yeah, that's fine.
Tell me what you mean when you say dump. Somebody dump somebody.
Mama dumped my sister.
What does that mean?
Drown.
The female voice you heard in this clip asking to leave the room is Brenda Burns, AJ's grandmother, and you can imagine why. AJ is sharing his core story, that his mom, Brenda's daughter, drowned his sister because she was making noise while Amanda tried to sleep. Here's what Brenda had to say when N. Lee Hunt talked to her for the In Esto podcast.
I mean, that must have been difficult for you.
It was. Matter of fact, I got up and left before it was over with, because I just couldn't listen to it anymore.
Why did you get up and leave?
Just some of the things that AJ was saying, you know, like Amanda holding Adriana under the water. And
did you believe what he was saying?
No.
But while AJ's core story that his mom drowned his sister for waking her up was disturbing, he also told a separate story. In this story, Amanda told Adriana to scoop bugs out of the pool so they could swim, and then threw her in the pool when she refused. The first problem with this separate story is that everyone says Adriana and the kids decided to go school shopping instead of swimming. Amanda said this, so did Alan Jr., and as we noted last episode, AJ testified to it at trial.
Were y'all supposed to go to town that day? To get some supplies, some school supplies?
Yes, sir.
So why would Amanda want Adriana to scoop bugs out of the pool if they were going to go school shopping instead of swimming? The second problem with this other story is that it's not entirely clear when this supposedly happened or how it fits with AJ's other story about Amanda drowning Adriana because she woke her up 3 times. To start, here's one version of the bug scooping story that AJ told the cops.
Did anybody go swimming today?
When mama gets done, mama told us when mama gets done getting out the bugs, I could get in the pool, but now I can't because the bugs in me is still in. And Adriana had to scoop out the bugs out of the pool, she said Adriana said she didn't want to scoop out the bugs by herself. And then mama told her to go do it. And maybe she stopped. And then she messed with stuff when I was asleep. And I didn't hear the spray because I smelled something when I woke up.
So here, again, it's unclear of how this story of preparing the pool for swimming squares with AJ's eventual testimony that they were going school shopping. Beyond that, AJ clearly goes back and forth on whether it was his mom or Adriana who was supposed to scoop bugs out of the pool. And when he says that maybe she stopped, referring to Adriana, he certainly seems to be speculating. Finally, AJ appears to be saying that this bug scooping happened before the spraying incident, with both of these things apparently happening while AJ was still sleeping, again, conflicting with his core story. You might have also heard in this clip that, in this version of events, AJ mentions Adriana messing with her mom's stuff. Here, he fleshes this out some more.
Was she... Why was she dunking her?
She messed with this boy in the... And she played in the water.
She played in the water?
And then she started messing with mama's stuff. Her thing that she washes her foot with, and her head will spoil and all her in a brush.
Now, recall that AJ's core story is that Adriana woke up her mom by messing with spray, watching TV, and slamming cabinets. That is the narrative at trial. But here, after the spraying incident, Adriana messes with their mom's brush, foot spa, and hairspray. And as you may have noted, in this version of the story, Adriana is actually playing in the water rather than just scooping out bugs, which would seem to conflict with Adriana's fear of water.
This story is so different that it's almost enough to throw out this alternate version entirely. But there are two other aspects we must mention. The first is that AJ does say his mom put the wagon by the pool so that Adriana could scoop out bugs. Here's the transcript of some of the Q&A toward the end of AJ's police interrogation after the recording of the cutout. Officer Hamilton, who put the wagon up there by the pool?
AJ. Mama, my mama.
Officer Hamilton, why?
AJ. So Adriana could scoop out the bugs.
Officer Hamilton, when did she put the wagon up there?
AJ, when Gone have to scoop up the bugs, and that's the only thing my mama had to put the wagon up there. The wagon was mine.
Now what's interesting here is that AJ says the wagon was the only thing that his mom put next to the pool for Adriana to scoop out bugs. Because again, we know the bike was standing right next to it. What's also interesting is that we know Scott Kirkland saw both the bike and the wagon in the wooded area over 100 feet from the pool when he bush-hogged at 1 p.m. And so, in these versions of the story in which AJ said that Amanda had Adriana scoop bugs before she slammed the cabinet doors and sprayed the spray, this wouldn't work because the wagon should still be in the wooded area. But this takes us to the other aspect of AJ's interrogation that we must mention. And that's the parts in his interrogation where AJ places the bug scooping story later in the day.
Then what happened?
When Mama got up, Adrian was still spraying the spray. And then Mama told her to go in the room.
Told who to go in the room?
Adrian.
Then what?
When Mama woke up again, she started to put Adrian, she told Adrian to get scoop out the bugs with Mama. And then Mama went to check the mail. And then Adrian said she didn't want to do it by herself. That's when Mama dunked her.
Tell me about that.
I can't see it because it was going to be dangerous. So Michael took me in the house when Adriana was dead on the ground because Mom pulled out the pool.
So issue one with this is that AJ again says he didn't see their mom dunking Adriana. And the other issue is timing. On the one hand, AJ seems to say their mom told Adriana to scoop bugs right after Adriana had woken her up between 12:30 and 1 p.m. On the other hand, AJ seems to place the bug scooping just before Alan Jr. took him inside, which was after the 911 call, later in the day at about 2:38 p.m. So how did prosecutor Larry Bassford try to handle this at trial? Here's what he said in his opening statement.
They're out there in the yard playing. The defendant comes out in the yard sometime after 1 o'clock. She tells Adriana that she needs to clean the pool, to clean the bugs out of the pool.
So you hear what Larry Bassford was trying to do here. He knew that Scott Kirkland would testify that he saw the wagon and bike by the wooded area over 100 feet from the pool when he bush-hogged at 1 p.m. Therefore, the bike and wagon couldn't have been by the pool at that point. And even though Scott Kirkland saw no kids playing outside when he bush-hogged, Bassford needed to have AJ playing outside at 1, because Bassford needed to prove that AJ had the right day. AJ anchored his memory of the day in question to the men cutting trees. That was the day before, but Bassford wanted to claim that AJ was saying he saw the bush hogging when he was playing outside on the day that Adriana drowned. And so that's what Bassford was doing here, alleging that AJ and Adriana were playing in the front yard at 1 p.m., with Amanda coming out at some point after Scott Kirkland had left, arguing with Adriana about scooping bugs, pulling the wagon up to the pool, and dunking Adriana a first time when she wouldn't comply, before sending Adriana to the park. Of course, we now know that neighbor Earl Wells said the bike and the wagon were still not next to the pool at some point between 2:23 and 2:28 p.m., but he didn't testify at trial. On the other hand, AJ did testify at trial, but not the way that Bassford wanted. On direct examination, AJ said nothing about Amanda arguing with Adriana about scooping bugs out of the pool, and indeed, nothing about the bug scooping story at all. During redirect, though, Bassford tried to bring this up, but to no avail.
You told us before that Adriana was cleaning some bugs out?
Yes, so.
Did Adriana want to clean those bugs out of that pool?
Yes, so.
Why was she over there cleaning the bugs out that day?
I don't know.
Did she have an argument with your mom outside that day?
Yes, so.
All right. Now, AJ, have you did your best today to tell us what you remember about this?
Yes, so.
All right.
You can kind of hear the defeat in Prosecutor Larry Bassford's voice as he knows he's lost this narrative. By the time the closing argument comes around, this thread is gone from the state's story. And that's because what AJ claimed on cross-examination was quite damaging to the state's case. Because on cross, AJ testified that Adriana went into the pool from the wagon rather than being thrown in by her mom.
How did she get inside the pool?
Out there.
You think she stood up in that little red wagon?
Yes, sir.
You think she stood up in the red wagon and then she went into the pool from the red wagon?
Yes, so.
Now, during rebuttal closing, Larry Bassford correctly clocked AJ's responses as coming from leading questions.
When he was asking those questions of AJ on cross-examination about his sister standing in the red wagon, do you think she stood up in the little red wagon? Yes, sir. You think she stood up in the red wagon and then she went into the pool from the red wagon? Yes, sir.
Two thoughts on this, though. First, Bassford's entire examination of AJ at trial was chock full of leading questions. Second, this was not the only time that defense counsel cross-examined AJ on the subject. And this other time, toward the end of AJ's testimony, AJ did much more than just respond to yes-no questions.
How would she get the bugs out?
Get inside the pool.
She had to get inside the pool. Well, how did she get in there?
The red wagon.
The red wagon, right. So she got in the red wagon to scoop out the bug, didn't she?
So.
And then she fell in the pool, didn't she? That's how she got in the pool, right?
No, so.
How did she get in the pool?
She stepped over the side.
She stepped over the side. From the red wagon?
Yes, so.
And then she started screaming, didn't she?
Yes, so.
Because Adriana can't swim, can she?
Yes, so.
Is she afraid of the water?
Yes, so.
Did you try to help her?
Yes, so.
What did you do?
Hanged onto the legs.
You hung onto the ledge?
Now, understandably, Walter Smith latched onto this version of the story and tried to sell it to the jury at trial.
That's the final version of A.J. Hutto's account of what happened in his backyard that day. That is the version that he gave you in this courtroom. And that is the version that fits the physical evidence.
But the jury didn't buy it, and I can see why. AJ said that Adriana stepped over the side of the pool instead of falling in. First, given Adriana's fear of water, I don't see her doing this. And second, the wagon wasn't very far off the ground, so I doubt Adriana even could have stepped over the side. But there are two reasons why I do think this final version by AJ is important. First, it shows him storytelling again, and not in response to leading questions. If Adriana didn't step over the side of the pool, why did AJ say she did? The answer would again seem to be that he didn't see how his sister got into the pool, and that this is yet another story he crafted to try to explain what had happened, just like the story about his mom dunking his sister. Second, I do believe the part of this story that AJ grabbed Adriana's legs and tried to pull her out of the pool. As we've noted, both AJ and Amanda agree that AJ got in the wagon and tried to fish Adriana out of the pool. And if AJ grabbed Adriana's legs to try to help her, she couldn't stand up in the pool.
And if she's leaning into the pool and he's hanging on to her legs, she can't stand up in the pool. He's got a hold of her legs while her face is in the water.
This takes us to a key part of the prosecution's case and the pervasive and pernicious myth we noted at the start of the episode. At trial, Prosecutor Larry Bassford went to great lengths to try to claim there's no way that Adriana could have accidentally drowned in this pool because she was taller than the water in it. Now, before getting into that myth, we already have two theories for how this could have happened. First, as just noted, even if Adriana otherwise could have stood up to stop from drowning, she couldn't have done so if AJ were grabbing her legs in an effort to try to save her. Second, as you recall from episode 1, and as we'll describe in detail in a future episode, Adriana had a bruise in her head when the first responders arrived. This led to Charles Corkin concluding that Adriana had fallen in the water from her wagon and hit her head. And if this knocked her out or made Adriana disoriented, it's easy to see her drowning despite being tall enough to stand.
Having laid that out, let's turn to the prosecution's argument then. It started with EMT Greg Barton, who testified as follows at trial.
Did you make any other observations about the area that day, sir, while you were there? Two things that buoyed us.
Yes.
What was this?
The height of the pool and not her life, that she was in a horizontal at that time. Just eyeballing her, I always thought that the water level or the pool level was about 1 foot deep on her. And, I remember thinking that night until the wife, why did she say no?
Prosecutor Larry Bassford made a pretty big deal out of this and similar testimony in rebuttal closing.
From the first paramedic that got there that day, after she had been life-flighted away, what was he thinking? Remember what Greg Barton said? The thought that kept going through his mind? Why didn't she stand up? The pool was not that high. Why didn't she stand up?
But then Bassford went farther, pulling out two tape measures toward the end of rebuttal closing to drive home his point to the jury.
We heard the testimony about it. Remember, it was 32 inches or 35 and a half inches. And Adriana was, 47 inches. Remember that? Sometimes it's hard to get an idea what those measurements are really like. But if we took a measuring tape, this is 2 inches here, 2 inches wide. So if we took this measuring tape and put it at 33 and a half, that would be the depth of the pool. And if we took this one, this is 3 inches wide.
put this one at 44. This would be the height of Adriana. Adriana was 47 inches tall. The pool at its highest depth, at its deepest part, was 35 and a half inches. Even Gidget Sanders says, Adriana can stand up. You could come to right about here with her. That's Gidget, that's a defense witness, a relative of the defendant. Can you see the depth of the pool here? Just so you get an idea of how high, how tall Adriana is. Look at that. Look at that. I would submit to you that no matter how frightened that little girl might have been when she fell in the pool, all she had to do was like she had done on other occasions when she went underwater and got a mouthful of water. Stand up, cough, breath, grab the side of the pool.
So is it at all strange that Adriana would have drowned in about 3 feet of water when she was 47 inches tall? Let's start with the stats. First, a full 25% of drownings nationwide happen in water that is less than 3 feet deep, with that percentage being much higher for child drownings. Second, Florida has the highest accidental drowning death rate in the country per capita for children ages 0 to 9. Indeed, accidental drowning is a leading cause of death in Florida for children between ages of 1 and 4. And while Adriana was older, what she shared with these younger children is not knowing how to swim. And third, almost 90% of accidental drownings of children occur with at least one parent present. All of which goes to say that if Adriana's drowning was an accident, it wasn't an outlier. To get into why that's the case, Colin spoke with Dr. John Fleetmeyer, a drowning expert with over 28 years' experience. Previously, Colin spoke with him for our Pam Lanier series back in 2018. And at the time, he explained why so many people drown in water that they're taller than. Namely, a person, especially one who can't swim, unexpectedly falls in water, freaks out, and simply never gets vertical.
A lot of, in my early life, I taught police officers in first responders water rescue. And the first thing I tell them to do when they see someone drowning is to yell, "Hey, stupid, stand up." I don't say stupid, but hey, stand up. Typically in 4 feet of water, if a person's 6 feet tall, if he's at a 45 degree angle, which wouldn't be uncommon, that certainly could, I could envision that being a drowning environment, and I could envision that happening.
So in that case, Fleetmeyer was talking about someone 72 inches tall drowning at an angle in 48 inches of water because he never got vertical. And as you might imagine then, Fleetmeyer also says there's nothing shocking about a 47-inch tall girl drowning in 32 to 35 and a half inches of water.
And they say, well, if this girl fell in, she could have just stood up and she wouldn't have drowned. And so what are your thoughts on that argument by the state?
That's pretty lame because there's the evidence is there's a great deal of evidence of I'm dealing with retention ponds. I just wrote a book that came out this past year, and history keeps repeating itself. Where a 4-year-old, 5-year-old, 2-year-old, 7-year-old, 9-year-old, 10-year-old will go in knee deep water and drown. The idea of water drowning only occurring in water over someone's head is a wives' tale. Like in kids drown in bathtubs. I've had a murder case where the child drowned in a bathtub. I was working for the defense, and they found in favor of the defense that this little boy actually did in fact drown in the bathtub. He wasn't murdered by his father, but so any there could be any any explanation about drowning in water that's not over somebody's head. And it happens all the time.
Specifically, according to Fleetmeyer, after falling in the water, someone who is freaking out very quickly enters into negative buoyancy.
And as the head becomes lower and lower in the water, a victim will begin to hyperventilate. And then you have air, which you and I are breathing right now, which is the tidal volume, which is going in or out of our lungs. As our head becomes lower and lower in the water, as we hyperventilate, that air begins to escape. And as it escapes, we become negative buoyant. And as we become negative buoyant, we go into water. At that point, sometimes a victim will bob up a few times, but eventually he or she will go underwater. And then at that point in time, they try to hold their breath as long as they possibly can. The literature shows it can be up to 80 seconds, but my research shows it's probably much shorter than that, maybe 40 seconds.
And so, yeah, that's how a person who falls in water and freaks out drowns pretty quickly. And keep in mind what Gidget Sanders said about Adriana, that she wouldn't close her mouth when she went underwater at her aunt's pool, leading her to taking in water when she went under. All of this means Adriana likely became negative buoyant very quickly. Then there's one final factor in Adriana becoming negative buoyant and likely to drown sooner rather than later. Adriana was wearing clothes, and not the kind you go swimming in. This is what Fleetmeyer said when Colin spoke to him for our Pam Lanier series.
And I talked about how clothing facilitates drowning. And I don't know if you have a pool. If you're near a pool, you'll be very surprised if you take a cotton T-shirt and throw it in the water, and the jury was surprised too. They think that, you know, throwing that in the water, it might take a minute or so for it to get saturated and sink to the bottom, but in actuality, in 5 to 10 seconds, it'll be on the bottom of the pool, and that's another thing that facilitates the drowning process because it becomes very negative buoyant and prevents a person from maintaining their body at the surface level.
And when Colin spoke to him about this case, he said much the same thing.
And this little girl was not wearing a swimsuit. She was wearing regular clothes. No shoes, but regular clothes. And I believe you've also said that's a factor in drownings, right?
Oh, it's a huge factor. Your clothing can make you very negative buoyant. And that can be a factor in keeping you from gaining the surface of the waters, you know, in the event that you would fall in. And it's surprising how much a T-shirt or how much clothing will actually weigh a person down and contribute to the point of being negative buoyant and preventing them to reach the surface of the water.
So if we can't trust what AJ claimed, and if there was nothing unusual about Adriana drowning in about 3 feet of water, what remains of the state's case? There's a theory that the state used to tie its case together. It relates to the bruising pattern on Adriana's face. But it didn't come from a medical examiner, but instead someone with no medical training or even a college degree. Next time on Undisclosed.
Hey, Undisclosed listeners, it's Meethal, executive producer of Undisclosed Toward Justice. As you know, we did something new a few months ago by utilizing SpeakPipe as a way for you guys to leave us voice notes. For anyone new here, you can go to speakpipe.com/undisclosed to leave us your questions or thoughts and comments. Since the response to SpeakPipe has been so amazing, we've got two additional exciting announcements to make. First, we have a new Facebook community group where you can engage with us and one another about all things true crime and criminal justice. Just go to facebook.com/groups/towardjustice and answer 3 simple questions and you're in. In addition to that, we also just relaunched our Patreon page at patreon.com/undisclosedpod. So many folks have already signed up and we can't express our gratitude enough to each and every single one of you. Even a dollar goes a long way and allows us to do the work pro bono for our defendants. Also, I would like to give a quick shout out to Hannah McCarthy for audio production, as well as Patrick Cortez and Ramiro Marquez for our theme music. To engage with us on social media, we're on Instagram and Facebook at Undisclosed Podcast. You can find us on TikTok, YouTube, and X at Undisclosed Pod. Whether you're new or a returning listener, you can check out our previous cases and bonus episodes by going to our revamped website at undisclosedpod.com. If you would like to follow Colin and Rabia on social media, you can follow Rabia at RabiaSquared2, the number 2, on Instagram, and Colin at EvidenceProf on Instagram, X, and Blue Sky. Thank you for your continued support for us and for supporting our sponsors. Until next time.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
2 ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playmcd.com for full details and amoe.playmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.